Please be seated. All of the post-resurrection stories in the Gospels are undoubtedly some of my favorite stories. They are simply so rich and so full of meaning that the temptation for a preacher is to try to preach it all at one time. But not to worry, I learned a long time ago not to do that. Instead, this year, I was actually taken by a blog post from one of my favorite authors. And what struck me most was the very first sentence of his blog. It said, "If you don't have serious doubts about the Easter story, then you're not paying attention." Now, that is not exactly what you would expect a Christian theologian to write, but think about it. Just think about it. Read today's story. Read all the stories. All of the gospel accounts have some interesting variations in their accounts of Jesus' resurrection. But where they are consistent on one point alone. And that is, no one believes it. No one believes the good news of Jesus' resurrection when they first hear it or even see it. No one. And that includes especially his disciples. Those who were closest to him. Those who knew him best. Those who spent all their time with him. Have you ever really considered that? Have you ever really thought about that? Have you ever really considered that disbelief in the resurrection of Jesus Christ actually starts with his disciples? The women see the empty tomb. The boys dismiss them and actually use a Greek word that can be translated as delirious. Peter runs to the tomb, sees it's empty, and evidently goes back to the house for happy hour. Two of the disciples are on the road to Emmaus when they encounter Jesus. And what's interesting to me about that whole wonderful story is that the whole time these disciples are going the wrong way. The greatest event in human history has just taken place. And these disciples have heard the stories and they've heard the rumors. The whole Gospel of Luke is pointed toward Jerusalem. And these guys are headed the wrong way. To a little town that's known for absolutely nothing. And what's even more amazing about the whole story is that Jesus chooses to walk the wrong way with them. And now in today's gospel, Jesus appears among them. He invites them to touch him, to dispel any doubts. And then comes my favorite part of this whole text. Luke writes, "While in their joy, they were disbelieving and still wondering." Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful language? That even after all this, they still don't fully believe. And somehow can be both joyful and disbelieving at the same time. Have you ever felt like that? I have. And maybe if you haven't, maybe you're not paying attention. Can't we just admit it? That doubt is not the opposite of faith. Apparently, doubt is a necessary ingredient to faith. And don't take my word for it. Just look at those who actually walked the path with Jesus. Because it is in that gathering of the faithful who had all kinds of questions and doubts, but could still find joy and wonder in this message of good news about new life. Or maybe they just wanted to find that joy and wonder and stuck around because they believed in hope. This great chorus of the faithful teaches us that it's not just okay to doubt, but the doubt is probably a requirement of faith. Because honestly, in the light of all the death and the trauma and disappointment and tragedy that colors every human life, the promises of our faith can all seem too good to be true and too unbelievable to believe. And if all that takes a little time to sink in and accept, then I think it's important to remember that we're in some pretty good company. Jesus' first disciples struggled with all this as well. Who blames them? Because the promise of resurrection, of new life, and of grace is so outlandish, so extraordinary, and so desperately necessary that it has always elicited a measure of doubt. But it has also always elicited changed lives as well. And it is in those changed lives, it is in that joy while disbelieving and still wondering, that Jesus calls his disciples. So, what do we do with all this doubt and wondering? Well, Jesus says, I want you to be my witness. Did you catch that? He wanted us to be his witnesses. Now, witnessing, that is a word that will strike fear in the heart of every Episcopalian. Witnessing. It's a word that frightens a lot of people, probably because we've had a bad experience on the receiving end of someone else's witnessing, or we don't know what we'd say or what we're supposed to say. And maybe the problem is as simple as we've let religious fundamentalism steal the meaning of the word from us. But like it or not, part of being resurrection people involves being witnesses. So what does that truly mean? Well, what does it mean to be a witness or to go witnessing? Well, let's just look at the first disciples, or maybe even just look at ourselves. We bear witness to things all the time that are important to us. You want to hear a witness? Ask Daniel Melzer about Gator football, or John Thompson about Seminole football. It's an illustration. Please don't do that, but you'll hear a witness. You want to hear a witness? Ask Mike Dickey about theology. You want to hear a witness? Ask Edith about sewing and quilting. You want to hear a witness? Ask Tom about old cars. You see, and it's really not any different when it comes to our faith. Witnessing doesn't mean shoving our faith down someone's throat or threatening them with eternal damnation if they don't believe like we do. And it's certainly not about conveying our own personal theology. It's simply telling other people what we think, what we feel, what we do because of our faith. Where we've sensed the risen Christ at work in our lives, whether it's at home or at church or at school or through a stranger or a friend or even through ourselves. And it's like any other thing that we bear witness to. It just involves candor and simplicity and communicating what we know as we know it and nothing more. And most blessedly, it sometimes can include those difficult words for we human beings, I don't know. And my friends, in a world so intent on certainty, it must include our honest doubts. And then our faith is no longer a destination. It truly is a journey, a joyful journey, full of wonder, full of joy, full of disbelieving. Is there one way to do it? No, there's not. Does it have to be perfect? Absolutely not. But I am convinced it is the only way that a wounded world can come to know the presence of the risen Christ with the same joy, disbelief, and wonder that changed the world once and can change the world again. Can I get a witness?
Amen.
Can I get a witness?
Amen.
Can I?
Amen.